episode 67, When Buying a House is a Frugal Move.
Welcome to the Frugal Friends Podcast, where you'll learn to save money, embrace simplicity, and live a richer life. Here are your hosts, Jen and Jill.
Welcome, everybody, to the Frugal Friends Podcast. I'm so excited to be saying those words again. I'm Jen.
I'm Jill. Jen's back.
Woo! I did it. I had a baby. I went on a maternity leave, and I made it back to the podcast.
It's such a good feeling. I missed you. There were times that I listened to the podcast just to hear your voice. Did I tell you that?
Oh gosh,
I think
no.
I might have texted you that. Oh, I almost texted you that. It was really adorable, if I can say so myself.
Yes. And I have to admit, the first time I called you after being away from you for so long, I had to admit that I understand now what cute aggression is. And if you listen to the ends of the podcasts, you'll know that Jill and I we had differing views on like how much we loved babies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No one, it's either you really understand it or you really think it's weird and scary. There is no middle ground with cute aggression, but I am glad that there's a term for it. So I don't feel as crazy. But it's basically where you want to bite off the chubby legs of babies.
Yeah. And so I get it now. And even I found a Key and Peele sketch instead of babies, it was with puppies. So it's a thing and I get it and I'm here for it.
Yeah. So, we can link the Key and Peele skit because it's worth it.
We should definitely do that.
Anyhow, Jen's back.
And we're not doing anything light today. I've decided we're getting back into it. You guys gave us a ton of episode ideas in our Facebook group, the Frugal Friends community. And we're diving right in with the renting versus buying discussion. And I think you're all going to really like it. Got some down payment info, some paying off mortgage versus investing, all that stuff upcoming. But first, we wanted to talk about our sponsors, and then we got a little surprise for you before we get into it.
Mm. So we love and we use Rakuten, which was formerly Ebates. So we want to give them a shout out. And if you've never used it, Rakuten is a shopping portal where you get cash back on purchases from all of your favorite stores, wherever you shop online. We've used it for Groupon, Amazon, Walmart, travel sites, tons of other places. So if you haven't tried it, please do. It's called Rakuten. And we've got a welcome bonus for you. It's $10 that you get after you've purchased $25 or more. So they just keep track. It doesn't have to be on one single purchase. Just as you are buying things, once you've reached that $25 mark, you get $10. So sign up through frugalfriendspodcast.com/Rakuten, and you will be on your way to all sorts of cash money back on the things you already purchase.
So good. Today's episode is also brought to you by co-parenting. Have you recently had a baby and you're desperate to talk to tall humans again? Want to contribute something to society that doesn't poop on you? Try co-parenting. Here's how it works. Hand your child to your spouse, leave the house, and say good luck. Co-parenting. It's not just for dirty diapers or separated parents.
That
is literally what today's episode is brought to you by. Travis is in the other room holding our baby, and I'm so thankful for him. And that's all.
Yeah, I know. People really, I've seen parents do rock, paper, scissors shoot for the dirty diapers or for bath time. So it is really handy in those situations. But
and I have talked to men who have never changed a dirty diaper, or who like can't stand the sound of their child screaming, who like can't handle it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you got to man up. You got to, you got to do this thing, you know, with your person. So shout out to Travis. If you want to meet my co-parent, if you want to meet me, if you want to meet Jill, mm-hmm. we have a really special meetup planned, and I'm so excited to announce this. We will be in Washington, D.C., September 7th, and we're doing a meetup at 5:30 p.m. At Kalorama Park. I hope I'm saying that right. It's by the Washington Hilton. So we're so excited.
And we'll post about this in our Frugal Friends Facebook community group. Hopefully we'll be able to announce it through FinCon. We will be at FinCon. So this is the meetup that we're doing during that time. But if you are also just in the area, you're welcome to join us because it's a public park. No one's going to stop you from coming and hanging out with us.
There's
but you can't do anything
playground.
Sketchy because we will be in a public park. So don't think that you're going to be able to come and attack us because you can't.
Sure. Yeah, please don't. And if you have friends in the DC area, message them and tell them to come out because we're just going to have a frugal time of fun. Bring your own snacks. We're going to hang out. There's a big playground for kids and just hangout areas that we can be frugal and hang out. So that, again, that is Kalorama Park, September 7th at 5:30 p.m. We're super excited.
Yeah, looking forward to meeting people in person. Let's get into it.
Let's not waste any more time. We're talking about renting versus buying for houses. And so our first article is from Lifehacker, and it's why the rent versus buy debate is pointless. So
I really liked this article and the perspective that this author brings, because at the end of the day, and so spoiler alert, it's not just about this conversation of renting versus buying. It's what life season are you in? What makes most sense for you as an individual? So that's the point of this question, not whether or not one side is always right or always wrong. So I really appreciated that. And then I think it gave some excellent things to be thinking through with whatever season of life you're in on what might be the best choice for you. And I think it's always true. The pendulum swings, right? Like years ago, it was, you're an idiot if you don't buy. Buying is the best thing that you can ever do. And now there's articles coming out saying renting is the best thing. Don't ever buy. That's the worst investment ever. And the reality is somewhere in the radical middle where no one often goes, but where we often should all live, not in either extreme. So we're hoping to be able to walk that radical middle line with you all and help decide what's the best thing for you. So the article goes into the arguments for both sides. What are the arguments for buying? What are the arguments for renting? And some of the common ones, and both excellent points on each side. For buying, when you pay off your home, it's yours. So they say that you eliminate the expense of housing once you've paid it off. Yeah, great point. It is an investment in some ways. They also say that if the home appreciates more than what you've paid in mortgage or interest, taxes, maintenance over time, then you've earned a return or you've at least broken even and then you've had a place to live. And a lot of times there's tax credits to help offset the cost of home ownership. Now we'll get into some of the devil's advocate pieces of even these arguments, but yeah, for the most part, those things are true. And as far as renting, some of the arguments include that if you own your house, you're going to pay quite a bit in interest and taxes. And that renting isn't just throwing money away, like most people would say, you know, that you're just flushing it down the toilet. Well, you get a place to live that does have value. So valid point. Mm-hmm. And that there is an opportunity cost to buying. So what you pay in down payment, taxes, insurance, interest, et cetera, you could be investing while you're renting. So it's worth thinking through, if I want to rent long-term, what could I be putting that money towards instead of towards a house? And so again, neither one is all right or all wrong. It just depends on your situation. But I think it's worth knowing what are the arguments on both sides.
For sure. Yeah. And I think people, when they rent, you save up for that down payment. And so that's money that you could be investing, but you're saving for a down payment that over time will appreciate maybe 4 or 5%. So just over inflation. And then you're also, when you're renting, you're buying patience. you're buying flexibility. So it's these arguments that people have for not renting, I think, are really overrated. Mm-hmm. That coming from a homeowner.
Right.
So there are a lot of strong arguments for either. And then there's some individual factors that make it impossible to simplify when you own a home. So these are some things that you should be aware of if you're looking to buy. So you want to know how long you'll live in the home. So this will vary and you won't be able to pinpoint it exactly, but know that just a rule of thumb, the longer you're in the home, the better. You'll also want to know the cost of housing in your specific area. So that's different. In most cases, people rent because houses are too expensive in their area, but it all depends on the market you're in. And then again, the opportunity cost of your taxes and insurance. So what kind of long-term return could you get if you had invested the money in the stock market instead of buying your house? Because most people will just look at a mortgage calculator and calculate their mortgage and PMI and stuff and forget about taxes and insurance. Or they'll buy a home and look at what the past taxes have been and not realizing that once you buy that home, the cost of it goes up and that's submitted to your city. So the taxes will be more than what it was previously because it's appraising for more. Mm-hmm. So you have to be aware that the taxes will most likely be higher than the taxes that are on history. And then also the opportunity cost of the down payment, like what I just said. If you're saving 10% of your income for a down payment, that's 10% you could have been investing for retirement. So you just have to weigh that. It doesn't mean it's a bad thing and that you should just be investing instead of saving for a higher down payment, because the bigger the down payment, the better. Mm-hmm. But you just have to, like, what are your priorities? Do you want to retire earlier or do you want to have a house for, like, you and your five kids? What's more important? Mm-hmm.
And I think all these things are worth considering. I think for some folks, there isn't much thought that goes into it, much like I'm going to college right after high school. For some people, there's not a consideration of what the other options are or why they're doing it. So I think even the point of us even talking about this is just to bring some awareness to each of those things. Like we mentioned, some of the unforeseen costs. What do you want your life to look like? What's the long-term plan? What would be most beneficial for you and your family? And I appreciate how the article says in here that the answer on whether to rent or buy hinges on the specifics of rent prices in your area versus prices on homes, interest rates, and so on. So it doesn't mean that it is a good or bad decision. Like, it, buying a home could be a bad financial move, but for some, it isn't. So there's so many things to consider, but I think that's the key takeaway, is that let's think this through and not just say, oh, I've heard that it's flushing money down the drain to rent, or I've heard it's great to buy, and just do it, but to think through all of these other pieces that go along with it.
Yeah, I think we can alleviate, like, a lot of worry about this decision by stating that a home is a purchase, not an investment. So there are real estate investments, buy and holds, flips, landlording. That's when a house is an investment, but a home that you live in is a purchase. It's not something like your retirement fund that should be, you know, growing at around 8%. Like, mm-hmm. a home won't grow enough to make it a viable investment. So while it could be a good financial purchase, it is a purchase. And don't view it as an investment. So
That's
I think
helpful.
That can take a lot of stress off.
Right. Even the pressure or expectation that I'm going to be the next real estate guru through purchasing the place that I'm going to live in. That's not reality. But yes, you do need a place to live that suits your needs. So make a wise purchase. That's fantastic. I think I've heard you describe that in your own home buying journey, Jen, that you recognize what it was at the time you did purchase before you were out of debt, and just saying that, but this suited our needs. And
yeah, exactly. And We were getting kicked out of our rental, not for anything we had done, but he wanted to make it an Airbnb. So we were getting pushed out. Mm-hmm. And we decided we had the opportunity to rent or buy at that time. And the rentals we were looking at didn't serve the quality of life that we wanted for the price. Mm-hmm. And like, granted, we're not looking for a high quality of life here. We were trying to pay off debt. And, you know, we took like ketchup packets from the gas station instead of, you know, buying ketchup. You know, we're not looking for lavish living quarters. So it was just, it didn't serve us in the way we wanted it. So we decided to buy, and we put 3% down, which I like don't recommend, but it's what we did. Because we didn't have much time. Thankfully, we were on, we just used our money that we would have put towards debt, mm-hmm. the down payment. And we were on such a high momentum, we were able to get 3% really quickly.
Yeah.
And we love our house. It was not a fixer-upper like we had planned to do to, you know, get the quote-unquote investment out of. It was a flipped home. And so we paid a premium for having it done for us. And I don't regret it for a millisecond. It was the best decision because we got time back instead of putting it into our home, which is an investment we would not see for a decade until we sold it. We were able to put our time into our jobs and our side hustles that got us out of debt. And so that was the, you know, we paid a premium on one thing to be able to do something else.
But yet it was a wise purchase for you in that you have been able to generate some income through having it be an Airbnb. So that's another consideration too, that, yeah, we don't want to always look at this as an investment, but a purchase, but to consider how might off of this purchase, I be able to make some money or make this more cost effective for me, and whether that you can utilize it for Airbnb or have a personal business on the property or what have a garden, whatever the case is, those are some things to consider in buying also.
Yes. Not a lot of people think about quote unquote house hacking when they're thinking about buying a home, but it's such an amazing way to kind of go in the middle. So live like you're renting, but have that home that you can be building equity in. And it's basically the concept of buying a duplex or a triplex, quad, or a house with an in-law suite, or if you're flexible like Travis and I, renting out your front room and bathroom on Airbnb. But like if you get the duplex, you can live in one side and rent out the other long-term or on Airbnb, whatever you feel comfortable with. My dream is to have a house with a in-law suite one day that we can just generate continual income from the in-law suite. So that is not something people automatically gravitate towards, but it is a highly underrated method. And then once you're done and you want like an actual house, you can keep your duplex and continue renting it out for residual, for passive income. And then get your house, you know, and while you are living in the duplex, the side you are renting is paying for your mortgage, for your full mortgage. So it's just a great method.
Again, I think patience and thinking long term is so key here. I see so many people in our age group, right? 30s, who are wanting to purchase their forever home. And it's like, well, does that have to be the goal or the expectation? Can we bootstrap our way to that, purchase within our means, and generate some income off of our property and work our way up to that point and be a little bit more wise and frugal, if I can say it that way, by implementing some patience and some long suffering in this process?
Yeah. When we went into our home buying, we were adamant that we were not buying our dream home or our forever home. We were buying our starter home. And that allowed us to search like a lot smaller, something that we could be in for more than a few years. We'll talk about numbers later, but something we could be in a reasonable amount of time to get our money back, but not something that we would be in for 20 years. Mm-hmm. So, because we didn't need that space. We'll need that space in 10, 15 years, but we don't need it right now. And so mm-hmm. we can afford to start with a smaller home.
Absolutely.
So that could even be one of the benefits of home buying sooner, is that you can start smaller versus if you already have a big family, then you have to start larger. So it's just look at what makes sense in your area.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
With those things considered, our next article is from Bankrate. And so this gets into some of the numbers and nuts and bolts when considering renting versus buying. So first you want to be in the right mindset, knowing that there's no pressure. You have to do what's right for you. But when you've decided what's right for you, you can look more closely at the numbers.
Mm-hmm. So some things to consider as you're debating this topic for yourself is, what can you afford? And so we'll tell you, here's how you figure that out. Your total monthly costs, if you were to buy, should be no more than 25% of your take-home pay. So total monthly costs, that means your mortgage, interest, insurance, taxes, all of those things combined, you should not be spending more than 25% of your income.
Yeah. And you should also be able to put money away for appliance replacement, roof replacement, and then things that come up, and also like home improvement, because you'll want to improve the house and make changes over time. So you should just be budgeting for that anyway. And all of that should be no more, honestly, like no more than 20% in my opinion, but experts say 25%. So we're going with 25%.
You got 5% wiggle room.
Yeah. And so the second question to ask is, how long do you plan to stay in the home? So in order to recoup closing costs, have the home appreciate enough to get money out and break even essentially when you sell it, experts say that you should stay in it a minimum of 5 years. So while we're saying don't buy your 20-year dream home, don't buy a tiny, if you plan on like having a kid or something in the next 6 months, don't buy a tiny one bedroom duplex with one bedroom on each side. You know, don't buy something you won't be able to stay in for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Plan ahead and get something that you can stay in for, you know, a reasonable amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Another question to consider is whether you want stability or flexibility. And so I think we can all assume which one is which, but buying would equal some level of stability. Renting could equate to some flexibility. So this is, again, where you have to consider your life stage and potentially location also. Even if you've been in an area for a while, is this where you want to settle down, or would you want to consider a different area? Or if you're moving into a new area, it may take you some time to figure out where you want to settle in. And so even if you have the money to buy, consider renting first to suss out the area and decide. There are so many of my friends and even acquaintances who have moved to other cities and purchased immediately because they had the money and they toured the place on a video call and just bought it. But then they got there and a few years later say, you know what, I actually want to be in this area. It's more family friendly, or there's more activities, or the nightlife is better, and I'm moving. And usually that happens before those 5 years that Jen just mentioned of max or minimum amount of time to be able to recoup your costs. So just employing some wisdom in this for what's going to make most sense for you, even if you do have the money.
Right. And at that point, it can be hard to justify renting, but know that you're buying patience and time for that year. And I mean, you could also negotiate with your landlord to say, you know, I'll be here 7 months and then I'd like to go month to month. So you can have some negotiating power, especially if you have money up front, maybe paying for 7 months up front and saying like, don't raise the rent, I'm going to pay up front. So give me a discount. You can have some negotiating power there.
That's true. Good point.
You also want to ask if you can afford to be responsible for home repairs and maintenance. So that's that 5% that it's between 20 and 25%. So it just depends on how many improvements you might want to make to the house, if you want to move in ready, or if you want to do a fixer-upper. If you're doing move-in ready, you're going to take out a bigger mortgage, but you're not going to have as much to save every month for repairs and maintenance, and vice versa. So this is where we say, marry rich or marry capable.
It's everyone's favorite line. People loved that quote in a previous podcast episode. It was amazing to see the feedback on that one.
Yes.
The truth,
I think we will
really.
Be making shirts. Yeah. So marry rich or marry capable. If you want to have a house that needs a lot of repairs, know that you can afford to be responsible for those. If you're a single person buying a home and you know that you're not capable of making all of those repairs right now, you don't know how to do them, budget for having somebody else do them and just be on the lookout for affordable handymen, trustworthy handymen, and make sure you have the money to pay them.
But even if you're DIYing, supplies still cost money. So no matter which route, whether you are rich or you are capable or you're both, it is still going to cost money. Plumbing just by itself, just plumbing fixtures are so expensive. Electrical, tools, whatever, all of it. It does cost money even if you're doing it yourself. So consider that as well in your home buying endeavors. Another thing to consider here is, what are your financial, career, family goals? And how will your living situation either help or hinder you in those goals? Do you want to retire early? Do you want a big family? Do you already have a big family? Do you want to travel a lot? All these things would help you in considering what's going to be my best move. For myself, for Eric and I right now, we don't have kids. We work remotely and we travel a bunch. It is not in our best interest to be buying a home and cleaning that thing and mowing the lawn. That's that is the last way that I want to be spending my time.
Oh my gosh,
so
yeah.
I think there are, where you're at in life stage, what your life looks like plays a big part in what you're going to choose to do here.
Right. We have a lot of people in the group that their plans, they want to retire early, not like in their 30s and 40s, but just earlier than maybe 65. And so putting more money, investing more money up front helps with that. We're actually going to talk about that next week. But doing that more up front gets you rolling to retire earlier. Whereas for saving for a down payment, for instance, experts say 20% is the ideal down payment. We all know that. And not a lot of people put 20% down on their first home, which is absolutely fine. But no, your mortgage payment and everything along with that is going to be more expensive if you don't. Like, we put 3% down. Flexible people say 10%. But when you're doing that, instead of putting 10% into the stock market, you are going to have to work longer. So I think 10% is a fine down payment, especially if you're doing a lower cost home. And then once you buy a home and you're moving to your second home, no less than 20%. So that's another reason you want to be able to stay in a place for more than 5 years, because you, without a doubt, want to put 20% minimum down on your next home.
Right.
So that's another thing you should keep in mind.
Yeah. I love in this article too, at the very end, they go into advantages and disadvantages of both buying and renting. I think it's an excellent breakdown and could be really helpful in guiding us in the individual decisions that we each make on this. Just to name a few, for buying, the advantages being that you may be, you can build equity and credit. You don't have a landlord to answer to. There is more stability, especially with schools. Some of the disadvantages mean that it requires more money, paperwork, all these things up front. You could lose money, right? That is a, there is a big if on your home appreciating.
We've seen it.
Yes.
Yep.
There are extra expenses beyond mortgage payments, and you are responsible for all the repairs and just where the housing market is going to go. We don't always know that. And it depends on the area you live in. regarding renting, there the advantages include that there's not a whole lot of cost involved as far as upfront costs. There's freedom to be a bit more mobile. You're not responsible for maintenance and repairs. You can build your credit. You don't have to worry about the housing market rising or falling. No property tax. But then the disadvantages of a landlord could raise rent. They could sell. You might have to move multiple times, and you're not building equity in that way as far as a house goes. So a really nice snapshot of some of the advantages and disadvantages of both that can help us to figure out what's going to be best for us, where we feel our most advantageous route is.
Yeah, I'll put another advantage on for renting. Mm-hmm. It keeps you more minimalist.
I agree. Because
moving every few years makes you go through all of your things.
I agree.
And discard things you're no longer using. Whereas in a house, you're not forced to do that. And so definitely you can hoard a lot easier in a house. And I've seen that.
And not that you don't care for your rental property, you don't take care of it, but there is an awareness, even subconsciously, that it is not yours. So even the level of investment that you put into decorating oftentimes is more minimal, which is very nice on the bank account also. So that's another thing to consider. If you know that once you get into a home, you're going to want it to look exactly how you want it to look right away, and you don't have the patience to employ to wait to get a couch and to wait to get nice furniture, then that could be a consideration in the amount of time that you take to buy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an upfront cost that you have to factor in to it. So we went from a one bedroom in a duplex to a 3-bed, 2-bath. And for the first 6 months while we were finishing paying off our debt, the extra 2 rooms were just empty. They were empty. And we didn't buy a bed or start doing Airbnb until we finished paying off stuff and we could furnish everything and get things pretty. But yeah, we had to be patient and wait in order to put the money towards that stuff.
Good for you guys. You know what else is good, Jen?
Good for my soul.
Good for everyone.
It's
the Bill of the Week.
That's right. It's time for the best minute of your entire week. Maybe a baby was born and his name is William. Maybe you paid off your mortgage. Maybe your car died, and you're happy to not have to pay that bill anymore. Duck bills, Buffalo bills, Bill Clinton. This is the Bill of the Week.
Hi, I'm a listener of the Frugal Friends podcast. My name's Tony, and I'm calling because I just heard the homesteading episode where it was announced about the layoff at 31 weeks pregnant, and I just felt compelled to call because I am 31 weeks pregnant. And I also have been living off one income, just my husband's income. And to hear how doing that and the work it takes to do that paid off so that you can have peace of mind and not worry so much about finding a gig right away, it was really reassuring to me that we're on the right track. I had a bill of the week. So my bill of the week is maternity related. I got a bill for a genetic testing that we had done based on our midwife's recommendation. And I thought it would be covered, and it came to our apartment and was $2,500, which was not in our budget at all. And I had been inspired by y'all's episode about calling about bills, but doing it in a really nice way. I have the same issue where I can lose my patience on the phone with customer service and usually send my husband to deal with people. But I decided, nope, I'm going to do it. I'm going to be extra nice. And I called my insurance company. They had denied the claim, but I had asked them to look up the exact claim wording of what they cover, and they could not even find it. So it was kind of ambiguous about what they covered or not in regards to the test. And then I also called the company, and they said they would reopen the claim with the insurance company based on my conversation with them. So it's been about a month, and we got our summary from the health insurance, and they covered $2,000 of it. The claim got reopened, and they processed it. And so now I'm waiting for the $500 bill, but I'm definitely feeling empowered to call the testing company and see if I can get any discounts on that too. So thank you all for your advice on that. I really appreciate it, and I really enjoy the show. Thanks.
Oh my gosh.
I'm literally pumping my fists in the air.
There are 2,000 things I love about this bill of the week.
Yes.
The first is that I'm so glad you were empowered by my story of being laid off at 31 weeks pregnant. Yeah, exactly what you said. When you're frugal and you live on less than one income, when you have two incomes, then you don't have to worry about an unexpected job loss. And I'm really excited for you to have that baby and know that feeling and not have to worry about that. And also, gosh, maternity-related bills suck. I am knee-deep in them still. And I have also been on the phone with insurance providers and medical facilities. And yes, they do offer like pay-in-full discounts, and insurance companies make mistakes all the time. I'm waiting. I've been charged $3,000, $4,000 for something that I shouldn't have been charged for, and I'm like waiting for them to take it off. So yeah, I'm so glad you did that, Tony.
Ugh. I agree with everything Jen said, and I just want to add that I'm so glad to hear that your being nice on the phone paid off. I know that that wasn't an easy thing to do. We're all growing in maturity over here. So glad that you did that. And also celebrating with you for dropping $2,000 off of a $2,500 bill. My goodness, could you imagine if you had just tried to pay that without even knocking down some of these doors and spending some time on the phone? Just excellent job, Tony. Thanks for sharing. We hope it inspires others to do the same thing. Don't just let these massive bills happen to you. There's something you can do about it, and you can do it in a kind way and still win. So thanks for sharing that bill with us, Tony. If you want to submit your bill of the week, visit frugalfriendspodcast.com/bill to leave us a bill. It can be heartfelt. It can be funny. It can be full of wisdom and insight. It could be hardly related. We'll take it all. It could just be that you are named Bill and you say whatever you want to say on our podcast.
Oh my gosh, so true. Yeah, get your friends named Bill to call in. That may be a dangerous ask.
Yeah.
But
equally as dangerous, the lightning round. Sorry, I didn't wait for you on that one.
You shouldn't, because this is your round. We do this for you. And this one specifically is for you, because if there is one person that has not bothered with the buy versus rent question, it's Jill. She has lived so many unique ways, not renting, not buying. Like, you don't have to ask yourself this question. Just talk to Jill and she'll show you all the alternatives. So
I'll show you the radical middle and the outliers.
Yes. Okay, Jill.
Here we go. Okay.
Alternatives.
So I'm not sure what this is considered. I think we are benting. Is that
benting?
We're somewhere in the middle. So we live in an RV. I'm sure you all have heard this before. We have lived in an RV before. We're doing it again. And it is us owning within our means, but yet it is mobile, so we do have to find a place to park it. So I would encourage anyone who does want a little bit of ownership, but is not in a position to want to rent or buy. So there's a bit of both here, where you own your home, but then you rent the space where you park it. Or if you're lucky, you can find a free place to park it. But even still, probably best to pay somebody at least a little bit of cash for using their property in that way. But it's a fantastic way for us to be able to have something that we are building a small amount of equity in, certainly, but we have something that we can sell, and hopefully it will be our down payment when we do find a place that we want to buy.
Yeah, because you did fix up your RV, so you will be able to sell it for more than you purchased it
for. Yeah, we anticipate making more than a couple grand off of selling this, which will mean then essentially we've lived for free and then we have a down payment when we're done. So
yes,
that's my favorite hack.
Yes. Another hack that Jill has used is to live with family. So this is not obviously something for large families or older people might be sick of their family. But if you're young and you don't have many kids or don't have any kids, you can and should be open to the possibility of living with family. So either parents or grandparents, maybe helping them around the house in exchange for rent money. But yeah, it's a great way to postpone spending the money to rent or buy.
Another thing that I have done and would recommend is long-term house sitting. So again, an alternative to renting and to buying is if somebody is not living in their home for a season because of work or other life circumstances, and they want somebody to take care of their house or possibly pets or animals while they're away, this is something that you could also consider. I think we mentioned this in one of our previous episodes, but I can even post a link to some websites that help to link up people looking for house sitters as well as people who want to house sit. Certainly, there are short-term options, but there are also people who are looking for a year or more for people to just house sit and make sure that the pipes are being used and the property's being cared for and just keeping the house lived in.
Yeah, because it is not uncommon that people have to go away for a year for a certificate for education or work or something. That is actually super common. So, and our last alternative to renting and buying is to build your own home out of earth bags.
Yes, Jen, you went there.
I found an insulated earth bag house tutorial. If you're interested in building your own home out of bags filled with earth and stacking them on top of each other.
To be clear, this is not something that I have done. The rest of them I have.
Only
this one, I have not built a home out of earth bags. So
maybe with this instruction article that I found, maybe this is what's next for you, Jill.
It's inspiring me.
I believe it. I believe it. If you have built your own earth bag house, please let us know in our Facebook group, Frugal Friends Community, and I will be impressed.
Fantastic. Well, we hope this helps you on your journey of figuring out what's going to be best for you and whether you want to rent or buy. Just know that we don't judge either way, whatever's good for you, but I will encourage buy within your means. Don't stretch so far that it causes overwhelming stress for you.
Yeah, you should still be able to reach your other financial goals.
Yep. Consider if you are buying, consider how you can make money off of your purchase, even if it's just a garage on the property that you can rent out as storage space or whatever the case is. Just get creative with it. That's the frugal way.
Yes.
And last but not least, we're doing the book club thing. So it is August. It's my birth month. What? I get to celebrate.
You were born.
My being born, which I really had little to do with. So thanks, Mom. And we're reading The Simple Path to Wealth by J.L. Collins this month for book club. So jump in on that.
Yes. And this is a self-published book. So a lot of libraries have it, but some don't. But it is essential reading for anybody that wants to learn about investing and retirement in a simple way. So if you want a free copy, you can enter to win one. Just leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher, screenshot the review, and send it to frugalfriendspodcast@gmail.com. And we will select one winner for every five reviews at the end of the month.
You know, Jen, I was scrolling through our podcast on iTunes and just found a really helpful review that I thought that I would share with people. Just some fantastic writing, great insight, just a really helpful. It happened to be 5 stars. And it was written by Giselle Blekvizik. And they
That's
say
just a lot of letters.
It's just a lot of letters, but I think they're from Russia. They love the Frugal Friends. And they say, I am so happy to have found this awesome podcast, period, space, 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 space. It brings me motivation and laughter. Thank you.
Did you write that, Jill?
Nope.
Is that why you're doing this?
I did not write that. Can I write a review on my own podcast? I haven't tried.
I think so. Travis wrote one, and you can clearly tell.
Oh, you can clearly
which
tell
which one his is.
I think
yeah,
I'm
we're
gonna,
not reading it on the podcast.
Oh,
the,
I think we will. I think I'm going to reference it in our next podcast. Anyhow, that's a helpful one. That's a potential potential book earning review. I can talk.
You don't have to even type in your name. You can literally take 30 seconds to type in some letters and a few sentences. And it does help more people find the podcast and get more information, like whether they should buy or rent a house. So we really do value them.
Yeah, thank you.
And if you have some time, we would love for you to submit a review. So thank you so much for listening. We will see you next week with a really good guest interview.
See ya next week. Welcome back, Jen.
Frugal Friends is produced, edited, and mixed by Eric Sirian. Oh, I do feel a little rusty. But it feels good
Where?
To be back.
What part of you feels rusty?
My mind feels
okay. Good.
Rusty.
I don't know what happens to the body after giving birth, so I'm just making sure.
My body is okay. I did go back to CrossFit. I started back and I've done 2 days so far, and my body is in extreme pain. Like I made a bad decision.
I was gonna ask. How you're doing? Were you cleared to go back?
Yes, I've been cleared for a few weeks, and I've just been waiting to really dive back into those rough workouts.
You know, Jen, we're older now. Our bodies don't just bounce back like they used to.
I know. I'm 30. I'm not in my 20s anymore.
I know. It is interesting to see my friends who give birth in their early 20s versus those who give birth in their early 30s. And what they're able to jump back into after childbirth is different.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm taking a break for the next few days to give my body a rest because it is similar. Well, the pain I feel is similar to the pain after I had a C-section is how I'm having flashbacks, like sitting on the toilet and like getting out of bed. Like I was like, oh God, that's how it felt.
That's what it was.
But instead of just one area of my abdomen, it's all my muscles and all my body.
Well, and it's not like you decided, oh good, I've been cleared. I'm going to go take walks now. You jumped into CrossFit, which is the most intense version of exercise in my estimation. So you might just need to be kind to yourself and not do that.
Okay. I'm going to go back in a few days.
Okay.
It's expensive. I got to get my money's worth. That's the only reason I work out is because it's expensive and I have to get my money's worth. And that's what motivates me is money.
I work out. Motivated by money. All right. See you later.